Hello, and welcome to the Inside EVs podcast for March the 3rd, 2023. This is episode number 152. Thanks for joining us. On today's show, we'll be talking about Tesla Investor Day highlights, the reveal of the refreshed Volkswagen ID.3, and Nissan accelerating its electric vehicle program, and much more. I'm Dominic Ioni, Inside EV's forum moderator and Inside EV's editor. Joining us today is the impeccably credentialed Mr. Tom Malogny, senior editor at Inside EV's and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We also have the practically mythical Mr. Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, which is available on all the best podcast platforms. And we have a special guest today. Please welcome Lacey, host of the YouTube channel Miss Go Electric. So welcome, everybody.
Hello, hello.
Nice to see you all. And nice to see you too, Lacey. It's been a while. So I guess let's kick this thing off with what we've been driving this week, I guess, and then get to the news. So Lacey, let's start with you. So what are you driving now? I believe you had a Tesla Model Y. Is that still in your fleet?
I do have a Tesla Model Y. I own a Tesla Model Y and I own a Model S. But right now I am driving a Nissan Ariya Platinum Plus e-Force.
What? You have an e-Force? How did you do that? Has anyone got an e-Force yet?
No. So they're not out yet. They'll be out in the spring. So the only vehicles available right now, as far as Ariya motors go, is front wheel drive.
Right.
And those are at the dealerships all over the country. You can buy them off the lot. But the all-wheel drive e-Force isn't coming out until spring, so there's still a little bit of time. But the reason why I have it, for a lot of people that might not know my background, is I'm an automotive educator. So that's been my career over the past decade plus, is I work with OEMs and agency partners to educate either consumers or their employees or their dealer partners on product launches. And now I have been focusing over the last, since about 2013, more on battery electric vehicles specifically. So a lot of general EV education, similar to Tom as well. So that's why I have this car, is I'm training dealers on this particular product.
That was going to be my question. Are you working with Nissan or for Nissan with this training?
I'm an independent contractor, so I own my own business and they hire contractors to execute the program. So I work with them because I help build curriculum and things of that nature. And I work for a lot of different automakers, so it's not just them. But
Well, I just wanted to make the distinction whether they gave you the vehicle because you're an influencer and you're going to create content, or if you're specifically going to be working with dealerships to train them. And it sounds like the latter.
Right. Yes. They did not hire me for Miss Go Electric to do any kind of promotion of their product. I just have it. So there's some things that I figured I'd try out with the charging network, because I have to charge on a daily basis for the most part. I'm traveling a lot. So I'm in the Northeast region and I'm driving from dealership to dealership. So I'm road tripping quite a bit. And so I charge on a daily basis. And the pictures that you're seeing there is just the other day I had posted. I've been driving this car in the Northeast for a few months now. I have it. I started in the end of January. But keep in mind, I've been on, I was on a program with Ariya in the summertime this past summer. So I've spent a lot of time with the front wheel drive unit, and now I'm spending a lot of time with the all wheel drive unit. And I am, I have this vehicle until mid May.
Wow.
So I'll be spending a lot of time with it.
You're going to be missing
knowing the ins and outs.
You're going to be Miss Go Ariya Electric, like expert here. So can you give us driving impressions at all? Is there like things that you can't talk about?
No, it's not really like a limitation on that side of things. I'm really learning a lot about it as I go, which is why I haven't shared too much. I want to solidify my experience with it, but I can tell you, I really like it so far. I'm beginning to really enjoy my time with it. But as far as like driving impressions, I'll say like, the pictures that you see here, what I had posted was that it handles very well. And in my opinion, it handles in snowy winter conditions with thick snow. I've already gone through a couple snowstorms out here because I'm going from like Boston area up through the tip of Maine and out into New Hampshire and Vermont. So I've already experienced quite a bit of snow. And I will say that the performance of the all-wheel drive e-Force unit is significantly better than the front-wheel drive unit, in my opinion. It's not that the front-wheel drive unit isn't right for some people. It's just, it's a pretty big difference. A 0 to 60 on the front-wheel drive unit is like 7.1 or 7.2 seconds, depending on what motor you get. Correct. And then the all-wheel drive unit is 4.8 seconds. So, just yeah. And the e-Force is great, as you know, with electric motors and the ability to have an all-wheel drive system that doesn't have a lot of like mechanical delay or anything like that. It's really fast to respond. And in this one in particular, the reason why I think it performs so well in comparison to what I'm used to in my Model Y is, you know, my Model Y, actually, they did a software update where they took away the feature to be able to adjust the regen to make it a more mild experience. So now it's like an auto regen. Oh, really? So as you drive in these types of conditions, it should adjust. But in my opinion, the regen is still really, really strong in my Model Y. And with the Aria, it has a few different modes to adjust. And they call it E-step now. So they used to be using E-pedal in the Leaf, where right. The motors are permanent magnet motors. So it could come to a complete stop with the regenerative braking system, whereas now the E-step is quite a bit more mild, and it kind of coasts at about 6 miles per hour. So then you have to use the friction brakes to come to a stop. So the regenerative braking itself is already pretty mild, but then you have the flexibility to like increase the intensity and things like that. And for me, I like to have the ability to turn that down because it creates a lot better security, and the slippage is just super crucial in those types of situations to be able to control. And you can modulate, but right. I like the performance of this better than my Model Y. And that's not to say that they can't make a firmware update that changes that, but sure. As of right now, I'm really enjoying it.
So Lacey, what tires are you running on now? Are they dedicated winter tires because you're in the snow
stock.
And everything?
Nope, the stock, these are the stock. Yep. Yep. Okay. Exactly.
Oh really?
Yep.
Not wearing what?
And they're 20-inch. They're original equipment tires. So there were some spec to this particular vehicle designed for that. And these are Bridgestone Alenza Sport all-season tires on 20-inch wheels.
So how do you think about the e-Force? What do you think about the e-Force drivetrain overall, like compared to the Model Ys, just as far as like...
I think it's good.
In pitching, like when you slow down, I mean, that was the big thing that that Nissan engineers were talking about when they were developing the e-Force, like how when you come to a stop, it doesn't pitch very much, or when you take off, right. it keeps a very level.
I think generally speaking, it does a good job of that. It also has independent struts around the whole car, so I think that also is a good contributor to keeping it pretty balanced, but. The torque distribution I've been following along on the, they call it the advanced driver assist display, which is just the instrument cluster there. And you have the ability to switch different viewpoints. And I've been toggling that to the all-wheel drive distribution of torque and watching it in real time at times. And it's very fast and it does a really great job, but it is front wheel biased most of the time. So you can definitely see a lot of that power shifting towards the front.
Okay.
And even when it kicks a little bit in the back, but it is it's very fast to respond. I've been driving it for, I think I got like 1500 miles on it now. And it's very confidence inspiring. I really enjoy the driving experience. I mean, there are more reasons to buy a car, but so far I really enjoy it.
I mean, that's a big thing though. If that's something you have to drive every day, you want to be able to enjoy that. You don't want to be,
I feel a way more like secure and confident in driving it in really snowy conditions.
I see.
It has a little bit more weight to it too. But yeah, I haven't had any situation. Like I feel like I'm just driving it in these conditions at like the speed that I'm supposed to be driving it.
Right.
You know, if it's listed at 55 miles per hour, I'm like going fit. I'm like, this is great. You know, I feel like I'm not going to lose control or anything.
Right. Ain't nothing going to slow you down.
That's right.
Nice. And suspension wise, how'd you find that? Like compared to Model Y, because that's I heard that Model Y is a little bit rough or hard or for some people, but
it's pretty good. I mean, it's not anything that, you know, it's not an air suspension or anything like that. I would say compared to my Model Y, it's just fine. You know,
okay.
I do like it that it sits up, you know, a little bit higher in comparison to some of the other competitors, but I like the interior of it. I have the Platinum Plus, which is like the fully loaded version. So this is like the top of the top, and it's really nice on the inside. I like the interior experience too.
Yeah, I like the interior a lot. That's nice. Anyone else have any area questions? We have any area questions in the, how's the charging speed been in the area?
That's what I was going to ask, because you're on this road trip. So how are you finding DC fast charging?
So it's in the winter, I've been noticing, like I had said in my most recent video that I posted on Twitter about the Magic Dock, is this has a peak rate of 130 kilowatts. And there's a setting to turn on the battery heater for the Aria. You have to go in the menus about 30 minutes to an hour before to turn that on. And when you do turn that on, it definitely helps. But even in the winter conditions that I've been experiencing here, it doesn't hit the peak rate, which, you know, it's fine. But essentially what I've seen as the peak rate is about 90 kilowatts. And I've only gotten that like a couple times. I'm mostly, when I'm plugging in at like 20 to 30% state of charge, pulling like 55, 60. And then it'll eventually taper down. But that's what's kind of interesting about the whole Magic Dock experience.
Right. We're going to talk about that in coming up. But yeah.
The charging profile was definitely different than what I was used to seeing on a lot of different. I've charged on EA, I've charged on ChargePoint, I've charged on a lot of different types of
EVgo
stations. I haven't been on EVgo yet. Right. Not with this car, but
right. I'm not sure there's that many of EVgo up in the Northeast there, is there?
There were a few.
Okay.
But usually, you know, there's only like one or two stations instead of like a bank of four or something like that. So I usually default to, you know, looking on PlugShare and seeing what the options are. And I'd rather go to an EA where there's four potentially to choose from than
true, right?
Than just one or two.
True. All right. See, any other questions?
Yeah, I just want to ask very quickly. So you have this car because you're an educator. And so mm-hmm. I was curious. I presume you're going into dealers to educate with this. So what's the current level? Let's take a kind of state of the nation, take the temperature on this. When you're going into a dealership, like, what kind of people are you coming across? I think everything from, you know, huh? What's an electric car? To being like, oh yeah, this has quite a high nominal voltage on this pack. What's the breadth of people that you're coming across, and how do you have to then sort of change your educating style to differ according to those people that you meet that, you know, are going to be everything from, you know, great dealers who just want to help people buy the right car for them, to probably the people, the guys and girls that give dealers a bad reputation. So what are you experiencing?
Yeah, you know, it's different. It's different across the board, depending on what region you're in. And, you know, I think one of the reasons why I was put in this region was because it's not as high volume EV sales. I mean, the good thing about the Nissan dealers is that they are used to selling Leaf. So they already have some baseline experience, but some of them still don't maybe necessarily understand, you know, why things they're active in the way that they are. So it really just depends. There's a couple of questions that I ask usually at the beginning of my sessions to try to figure out what their level of knowledge is, and then be able to adapt, because, you know, I want it to be an effective training for them. They want to get back on the sales floor, but also it's important information, and understanding it is a little bit more challenging than what they're used to as far as Leaf goes, just because there are a lot of differences in Aria from what they're used to in Leaf. So it differs, but I'll be honest, this isn't it's not unique to Nissan. Like every legacy automaker, they have people that are in the dealerships that have a variety of experience with EVs or passion with EVs. I would say, generally speaking, I think one of the big hurdles is combating EV myths when we go into dealerships, just because it's the same with the consumer side of thing, as you guys know, they hear something and they just regurgitate it and might not know that that's not true. Yeah. So that's a big part of it. But generally speaking, you know, my sessions are hours and hours long to try to provide not only the basic information about EVs in general to them, but also this specific product and why it's different than what they're used to and how it sits in the marketplace. So I talk a lot about the competitive comparison as well and what the conversations might look like as far as when consumers are trying to buy this vehicle, what the advantages are, what the disadvantages are. So laying that all on the table so that they can have a realistic expectation as to how to have conversations around this car.
Yeah, that I was talking to some friends at an MG dealership recently because they've got the MG4 in, which is the new one. And they were saying that the challenge for them is that there's a wider breadth of customer walking through the door. It can be everybody from someone who says, I've heard about electric cars. It seems like a good idea. Like, should I get one? To somebody walking through the door that's watched 25 YouTube videos. They've watched, you know, Bjørn Newland charging in Norway. They watched Kyle's videos. He said, and they come in and they tell us stuff that we don't know because, well, they don't need to know it as salespeople, but they've got customers coming in who literally are the experts because that they've enjoyed that research process as a consumer, as a customer. And so they kind of go in, but like they've already decided to make the purchase. And so I think they're the same as you. They ask those set of questions to work out where people are, and then just let them lead it. And it's certainly, I think, a challenge selling for good dealers. And these guys that I know at MG are very good, and they find it interesting selling electric vehicles, and they sell so many of them as well. Interesting.
I think you're right, Martin. And the thing there is, at least you know that was the experience with Leaf, is that they. These people would come in, you know, with the little glasses. Like, I know everything about this car.
And that's great. I love that so much as well. So.
But now, you know, Aria is a much wider demographic that it appeals to, like, even across the competitive set, young, old, you know, it doesn't really matter, male, female. And people are going to come in and be curious. And I've noticed that a lot of people have been saying in the dealers that people are specifically coming because of Nissan's history of having an EV on the market for a long period of time. So there's some trust there, which is great to hear. That's and good. Makes sense. But yeah, there's still a lot of education that needs to happen. And I'm sure, Tom, you're used to this, is that even when you're, you know, educating these dealers, you know, unfortunately, dealers have a pretty high turnover rate. Yeah, and they don't last. Sales consultants don't. The majority of them don't last more than 90 days in the dealership. So there's a lot of room turnover. For continued education.
It's a really, like selling anything, selling houses, cars, anything that's commission driven. It's a tough gig. It's not everyone's cut out for it. The good ones are amazing. The good salespeople are amazing, but there's a few bad ones. Yeah. You know, I've been shown around a few houses by bad salespeople.
We used to do follow-up trainings when I did the trainings, and I've worked with close to 500 dealers at this point. I really haven't been doing it as much anymore over the last 5 years. And one of the interesting things is the Nissan dealers were by far ahead of everybody else years ago. They always had one Leaf specialist that knew everything about the car, which was really good. They did a good job back 2011, 2012, 2013. When I was out there talking, banging on doors in other dealerships, they didn't want to talk about electric vehicles. And the dealers that had EVs were like just compromised conversions that were compliance cars, like the early Ford, you know, what was it? I can't even remember. They converted their gas car.
Oh, there was the Focus.
Focus EV. Yeah. Like Focus. Ford dealerships didn't even want to deal with that. But Nissan had a legit electric car, and they were way ahead of the rest of the pack in that regards. But it's interesting to me to see now how, as you mentioned, we had early adopters back then that came in and knew exactly what they wanted. But now we're moving to early majority, you know, and The people that are coming into the dealerships, many of them really don't know anything about EVs. They're not just saying, oh yeah, I want that Leaf. I know everything about it. Just give me the keys. Here's my money. And I don't really want to talk to you. Now people are coming in and saying, I'm thinking about an Aria, but I don't know. How do I charge it? How long do the batteries last? All these things. So there's a whole nother level of challenges that the dealers have to face right now. But one of the things that Lacey said that really interests me, and I'd love to go to one of your training sessions and just sit in the back of the room, is you talked about competitive advantage. It's one of the things I always had to talk about at the dealerships. Most of the dealers wanted me to say, they always wanted a benchmark Tesla. It was like, you know, when I went to the Volvo dealers, they're like, you have to give us some info, some ammunition on why someone should buy our car over a Tesla, because everybody comes in and says, I'm thinking about a Tesla, but you guys have an electric car too. So, you know, when you talked about, you know, competitive advantage, we've talked about this on the podcast. I think me, Kyle, Dom, Martin are probably all in the same camp that as much as we like the Aria, maybe I'm talking for you guys and I shouldn't, as much as we like the Aria, we don't feel necessarily that it's a great value up against Model Y, ID4, Ioniq 5, Mach-E. The other vehicles that beat it to market are kind of like each one does something better, in my opinion, and some of them are lower price points. So I'd love to hear how you talk to the dealers and tell them this is your advantages. You know, I mean, that would be fascinating. Are you coming to New Jersey, by the way?
No, as far as I go is New Hampshire and Vermont. So
I'd love to have you in the garage here if you come down.
I know, that'd be awesome. I tried to hit you up one time when I was in a program. I can't remember.
Yeah, that's right. I was working with another automaker
and I was like, hey, I'm like right down the street from you.
Well, you have an open invite. If I'm home, if I'm available, you can come over anytime.
Thank you. That'd be awesome. I'd love to see the garage. It looks amazing. So that's definitely part of my curriculum. And also, I think what's fascinating is that region to region, obviously, if you go to California, people are used to communicating and talking about EVs and they, you know, it's kind of a natural language for them at this point. But when you get up into like parts of rural Maine or New York or something like that, what's interesting is that a lot of dealers are like, yeah, but it won't work here because we get, you know, really bad winter and the charging infrastructure is not great. And to be clear, like the DC fast charging network up into like all the tip of Maine where I'm going is sparse, but I mean, I'm
being kind with saying sparse.
Yeah, I know. Well, there are a lot of actually, which is kind of exciting to see. And obviously when we see the NEVI stations get put into place, it'll be a little bit different, but there are some DC fast charging stations getting put in that are under service right now. And I'm like, dang it, I'm just going to miss the time frame on it. But regionally, it's also interesting to see the conversations had around it because these people, when I come in there, obviously they don't know me. So they're like, it won't work in the winter. I'm like, I live in rural Michigan and I don't have a garage. I have a carport and I drive two electric cars. Right. So they make a lot of assumptions. So there's a, you know, definitely a conversation around that and the expectation for utilizing DC fast charging. As we all know, it's, you know, most of the time we're charging at home, we're not using the network that's around us, but you know, it's also something important that I want to communicate because the Nissan dealers have been required, if they want to participate in their electrification program and selling EVs, to install fast chargers and level 2 chargers. So trying to communicate the importance of like keeping that on instead of turning it off when the business hours are, you know, over with for the day and things of that nature, I think are pretty impactful because, you know, sometimes I get the management staff, a lot of the times I get the management staff in there too, to communicate those kinds of important details. But yeah, that's what I've been doing for 11
years.
Wow.
I think they've got a really interesting job on their hands. I certainly won't ask Lacey to comment on this because she's working with them and it's a sensitive subject. But I think Nissan, like Toyota, have got a really difficult line to tread because over here they're now promoting their e-Power vehicles, which is an interesting technology. But the marketing people who are obviously different to the engineering people they've gone down the route that Toyota go down, which is, this is great because you haven't got to plug in. And I understand that. I get it. I totally understand why they're doing it. So for anyone watching that doesn't know, ePower is like a series or serial hybrid. So you put petrol in it, and it's a generator, and it and you so you drive on electric power, but you're generating your own electricity on board. It's an interesting technology, but the way that they're marketing that is, but you haven't got to plug in. So if you're a Nissan brand fan or a Toyota brand fan or anyone who's not a pure play Tesla, and so you go, hang on, you told me I shouldn't plug in because it's a faff and it's a pain and it's better. And now you want to sell me an electric, or my other choice is an electric car that I do plug in. And this is great because it's, and so I feel not that bad, but I feel bad for some of the big car makers, a little bit bad, because they're really struggling with that tightrope. And I think some of them are getting it wrong and some of them are getting it right, because Nissan don't know what to promote and Toyota don't know what to promote. Do they promote our hybrids are great, our e-power is great, our plug-ins are great, but in doing that, they sort of talk down the opposing technology. Honestly, right. I wouldn't want that job, because and there's that old phrase about, you know, you have the biggest building in town either by building the biggest one or knocking other people down, the other ones down. And they tend to be knocking the other technologies down at the minute. They've probably been told in focus groups that's the right thing to do, or that's worked previously or something. But I don't know how you do that because somebody might come in cross-shopping, or do I want an e-power car or an all-electric car? And I think we should just talk about the benefits of everything and be positive. And all the technologies are interesting. But, of course, that's not the way the world is. You know, you talk to a hydrogen person and they're like, oh, our cars are better than electric. And so many EV fans hate hydrogen. And you're like, this is too tribal for me. So, yeah, I won't ask you to comment on that. I'll just say my piece and shut up and let Don carry on.
So let's move on from Aria. But that's I'm really interested in hearing about that. That's awesome. So up until winter on your channel, you had a ton of micro mobility videos along with your car content. But more recently, I've noticed you've published a number of interviews with people in various parts of the industry, including Alain Visser, who is the founder and CEO of Link & Co. So this is pretty timely because there's a report out that Link & Co., which is owned by Geely, are coming. I think it's actually a Chinese-Swedish sort of thing there going on, similar to Volvo. But I think Volvo was kind of involved. Anyway, this is pretty timely because there's a report out that Link & Co. are possibly coming to the U.S. They have a presence in 7 European countries, and they have a pretty unique model there. So just briefly, maybe can you tell us a bit about Link & Co. and how they operate?
Yeah, so this was actually a really fascinating interview.
It was. I watched it.
You know, typically I'm pretty stringent on like what I talk about on my channel. I am an e-mobility channel, and I want to be full battery electric, not plug-in hybrids and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. And Link & Co., as it stands right now, they are not all electric. They offer the plug-in hybrid market in the European market for subscription. Mm-hmm. And I really feel like there's a lot of potential here, which is why I wanted to sit down and talk with him. And he basically, he was the founder. He brought this idea because he used to work for a lot of different OEMs, but more recently, Volvo is, he was like the director of, I think, marketing at Volvo for a long period of time. And then he pitched this idea to Geely, the parent company, and said, I'm thinking about this. I think this is a good idea for us to try. And Geely is actually doing something a little bit different in the Chinese market, but specifically in Europe, what they do is they offer one vehicle, and the focus is not necessarily around the vehicle itself, but it's around the idea of the business model where you are sharing your vehicle. So you can subscribe, and the pricing in Europe is 550 euros a month. And you have this vehicle, but then it layers upon that. So once you have the subscription for the car, they have an app where you can then share your vehicle that you are subscribed to neighbors or friends or anything like that. And while this vehicle is being utilized, you know, you can charge for them to use it. And therefore, some of the customers in Europe are actually making some money on the program. And he had stated that it's still somewhat in its infancy. Obviously, it's working. It's been operational, I think, for a couple of years at this point. Mm-hmm. But you know, I know the article in Automotive News said that they're going to come to the United States. And I asked him about this as well in my interview. That's a goal of theirs. They have a lot of ambition is to try to accomplish that, but there's no set date or anything like that. And specifically, it's kind of interesting, like what he had said in the interview, it's hard to get through as a new brand in the United States because of the dealer franchise laws in each state. But, you know, he had mentioned that they kind of operate like a rental company. And I don't know what kind of avenue they're going to be able to figure out as to how to get into the United States market. But that's something that they have talked about and explored. And that's something that they would like to do. It's just going to be really hard for them to actually achieve it.
Right. And when they do come, they'll have an all electric vehicle. That's the plan. I mean, that's, I think they're looking at 2024 to try to do it. But like you said, there's a lot of challenges to selling in the US. They have to, a lot of hoops to jump through.
I'm impressed with Lincoln Co. I was on a panel. No, I think I was chairing a panel at a mobility conference last year that Alan was on, and I was talking to him about what they're doing there. And what really impressed me about, he's a rock star, but he is allowed to treat that as a startup within a big company. So within all the resources of having Geely, of, I don't know, I guess having someone to call when your computer crashes, you know, an IT helpline, but they are allowed to effectively operate with a startup culture inside a megacorp. And that's a really interesting culture. So I was really impressed.
Yeah,
I think that's one of the strengths of the Geely partnership is that it seems to me that they're allowing the brands that they end up having a stake in to kind of operate as still their own brand to an extent and leverage the technology that they have, whether that's the platforms, like the vehicle that they're utilizing in Europe is on the CMA platform, which is also the XC40 Recharge and the Polestar 2 and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. But I think that it seems to me like Lotus, Polestar, Volvo, they still have the core of their brand identity that, and they can operate somewhat independently and have control of that. But it's a good partnership because Geely will allow them to, you know, take advantage of the scalable side of it.
Right. Okay. So let's move on to something else. The other big thing this week that was going on was trying out the Tesla Magic Dock for CCS vehicles. So we have some overlap today because Tom also visited the Magic Dock superchargers in New York State. But Lacey, you have a 60-second video on YouTube that breaks it down, your visit, and a 2.5-minute video on Twitter, actually, going over how to use it. So did anything really surprise you about the process of charging a CCS car at a supercharger? Like, do you think it'll be easy for most EV owners? And then we'll move on to Tom's on a crazy experience.
I think that it is a very easy and seamless process because what Tesla has done is, you know, there's the signage that you can scan the QR code to download the app and be able to create an account and find the station. It's, they have like graphics to show you how to release the connector step by step. So I think they've done a great job visually of providing, you know, a step-by-step instruction to start to charge. I mean, what the question I find is going to be interesting to see deployed is, you know, how is this going to incorporate into in-vehicle routing systems? Because as of right now, the only way you would be finding this is because you know that Tesla.
I'm having some connection issues here, I think, possibly. Is that just me?
Okay. Yeah, that's just you. If you can hear us, that's just you. Lacey, you can carry on. I'll send Dom a message.
I can hear you now. It's just like a couple of, I'm having some issues.
So as far as in-vehicle planning for routing to these stations and the availability of the Tesla stations, I think is going to be interesting to see how that is deployed. Of course, I'm sure PlugShare will start to note which ones are CCS compatible, but you know, what would that look like in the CCS vehicles on their in-vehicle navigation systems?
Yeah, and that's the same here as well, by the way. So we've had that open for, a couple of years now. And, you have to look on your phone and check if there's enough spaces at the supercharger that you're going to. I tend to avoid them if they're busy because I still think of them as Tesla destinations. But I suppose they're not. I guess they're open, which is a challenge because there's now, as of the beginning of this year, we're now not allowed to touch any devices in our vehicle. That's by law. So before we couldn't use our mobile phones, but people would say, well, I'm watching a YouTube video or something. So now is the beginning of the year. It's now illegal to take your hands off the wheel to touch your device. So you're not allowed to even pick up your phone to open up the Tesla app or something like that. That would be an offense for us to do. I think people obviously are getting used to that new law, but unless it's on your vehicles in route or in car routing and mapping, you're not allowed to be playing around with your phone in the car. So that's definitely a weak spot here as well, but that just probably a bit of specific UK legislation that is a faff because you can't play with your phone or, you certainly can't make a YouTube video as we see lots of people doing of them driving. That's totally illegal. So, but that's not going to be fixed anytime soon because Tesla retained the right to then take that supercharger off of the public pool and maybe put another one on. So the trial in Europe has all been about understanding which ones are busy, which ones are not busy. So at any time they could say, well, this one, which was public until yesterday, is not anymore. So you just open the app and see what's available that day. I don't think they're doing that. If they have done it, I'm not hugely aware that they've been doing it en masse. I think the ones that have been made available are still available as public superchargers.
Well, I think the whole strategy as to why they're opening the ones that they're opening is probably because of either low utilization and or the gap that there is between other CCS compatible DC fast chargers. But I think that they're being very strategic. It's because there's only 10 that are open right now across the country, and it will expand. And they are specifically trying to make them fit under the NEVI requirements. So there's some restrictions there that will force them to do things a certain way.
Right. If you look at the supercharger, if you look at the, in the Tesla app, if you go to the Tesla app and look at where you are, where the chargers are, on the website, it just shows you like the ones up in New England, the 10 or so, and a couple in California. But on the app, it shows you locked locations. Yep. So ones that are coming, so you can get a kind of preview if you want to check out if there's anything coming to your area. Nothing coming to my 100 miles radius here, but over farther south and up in Atlanta, I could see a bunch of going in. So that's cool. So Tom, you've had a pretty interesting week. You made a 30-minute video about charging your Ford F-150 Lightning at a supercharger, which also included hanging out with the world's most famous, most and popular tech YouTuber, Marques Brownlee, or Marquise, aka MKBHD. So maybe tell us a little bit about your experience and how you think this will affect the whole electrification effort.
And how to pronounce his name.
Yeah, the day was great, but the only thing that could have made it better was if Lacey left her house or where she was staying 2 hours earlier, then she would have overlapped my visit there. And it would have been, Marquez, me and Lacey hanging out. Now, for those of you that don't know why we're really harping on his name, MKBHD is the most famous tech YouTuber out there. He's got like 20 million subscribers on YouTube. The guy's awesome. Super job. I've been to events where he was at. We never talked though, like at different events. So as I pulled into the supercharger, he's there in that red Rivian. He's got a red wrapped Rivian. Nice. I pulled in and I parked next to him because that was the best spot for me to try to reach a plug. Now I have my Lightning and where the plug location is, we've talked about the cable problems. So I pulled right next to him and he's in the middle of recording a video for his channel while I do that. And as I pull on him, I'm like, oh, look, there's, as he gets out of his vehicle, I'm like, oh, wow, that's Marquise Brownlee. Now his name is Marquez. And I said, Marquise. That turned out to be bigger news than my video because I have I'm not kidding, more than 500 comments on my video of people saying, dude, like, you disrespected MKBHD by calling him Marquise. Anyway, I do it like six times in the video, I think. And he was cool. He didn't say anything. He didn't like correct me, but we kind of collaborated. I was in his video. He was in my video. Super cool. Super down to earth guy. It really went well. But here's great. Martin just pulled up. The Verge actually used my mispronunciation of his name as the lead for their story on their site. Like, was it really that newsworthy? I mean, kind of a jerk move, in my opinion.
I guess that, if you're like The Verge is a tech website, so yeah. He is right. Going to be like a deity to The Verge, and right. you just called their hero Marquise, not Marquez. So for them, this is the end of the world. Like, you mispronounced their hero.
It was so funny, but he was so cool. Maybe he didn't want to embarrass me by saying, you know, my name's Marquez, but he was just low key. I was doing my thing. He was doing his thing. And like, there was a point where he's in the middle of recording his video, and I had to move my car because it wouldn't reach, and I need to back it up and move it forward. So I didn't want to put the connector back in the magic dock and then have to reinitiate it and everything. So I pull it out and I'm looking around. I'm like, I don't want to lay this on the ground. I'm like, oh, you know, Marquise, could you just hold this for me? But he's in the middle of recording his video. I like interrupted him. So he's like, yeah, sure. You know, and he holds it, and that, like, you know, it was just funny. Like, the interaction was great. We had a good time. His followers were posting on his video. Like, that was awesome. Like, I can't believe you're reading it to Tom. A lot of his followers know who I am, which was really cool. And a lot of people are like, you guys should collab in the future. He lives close to me, so that'd I guess awesome. It's possible. Really? I should be so lucky, because just being in his video drove so many people to my video that I gained like 4,000 followers in 36 hours. I started out with like 56,000 and change. I have like 60,000 followers now. So that's the power of just having a guy like this in your video for a few seconds. You know what I mean? And then you being in his video, and he was really cool at the end. He didn't have to do this. He came over to me and he's like, okay, tell everybody, you know, who you are and where you're from and where they can find you. So I was like, yeah, Tom from State of Charge on YouTube. You know, I do all charging stuff. And then he even put a link to my channel in the description of his video. Totally not necessary to do. So he's legit. He's a cool guy and down to earth. And it could the interaction couldn't have been better. We had a blast. So
I want to show more of this video, but I think the YouTube machine will probably get us in trouble if we play somebody else's video. Now, a lot of the videos we play are Tom's or Kyle's, and that's fine. You know, they own the copyright, but we're allowed to play it. But we haven't checked in with, you know, the corporation behind MKBHD to ask if we can show this video. So I'll show some stills. Otherwise, we get told off. But it was so funny because, like, you know, it was just awesome because he was in the middle of making his video, and then Tom rocks on up, and then they just start this kind of collaboration spontaneously, and it was great. And he does come across as genuinely an EV fan. He made that video recently about how frustrated he was about the infrastructure. He genuinely seems like he cares about, you know, electric vehicles and gets excited about stuff like this when Tesla opened their network. But it was really cool because I watched his video first. I saw you write your article for Inside EVs, Tom. I saw it crop up on the homepage, and it kind of goes in my, oh, I'll make sure I watch that. But then I was on the homepage of YouTube and it cropped up. And I saw the video had, at this time, after a few hours, 540,000 views at that time. Maybe I can his see video. How many. Yeah, so now it's at 974. Yeah, so right. I was on the homepage of YouTube, and I'm like, oh, I'll click on that quickly. And then after 10 minutes, you crop up, and I'm like, that's Tom. Hang on a minute. So I saw his one first. So I was messaging you, being like, can we show the video? And you're like, yeah, of course, it's my video. I'm like, no, I meant like Marquez's. But yeah, so I
didn't know he posted it yet at that point, Martin.
Oh, yeah.
I had a longer drive home. I stayed there later than him. He was there before me. When I pulled up, I didn't know he was there. I pull up, I get out, and I start recording. So I'm here at the Brewster Supercharger, and then the door opens and he steps out, and I'm like, oh, that's, I'm seeing it in my selfie camera. I'm like, oh, Marquise Brownlee is here. You know, like, I totally didn't realize that, you know? And, you know, it in Subaru, I just kept calling him Marquise. So Marquise Marquez. Yeah, I did an E. I added an extra E to his name, and I got roasted for it. And, you know, I'm sure he's not watching this, but if you are, Marquez, I'm sorry I mispronounced your name. Totally wasn't doing it to be, you know, disrespectful or anything. I just always refer to him as MKBHD, but being in like with the person, I couldn't call somebody, oh, excuse me, MKBHD, could you come over here and hold this? Like, you know, so I just, the name just blurted out, but it worked well. It worked well for me. You know, I got a ton of followers. It drove a lot of traffic to my video. And I think the collab worked well. I think it was a lot of fun. As I said, the only thing that would have been better is if Lacey pulled in and we could have had the three of us just, you know, party, hanging out and doing that. So she missed me by 2 hours.
Well, just something like that.
Dom, 1 sec. The only thing I wanted to add, both Lacey and I made a slight mistake in our videos. And I realized it afterwards. Lacey, when you show yourself, initiating the magic dock and then just pulling it out. If you notice in my video, I struggle a little bit to get it removed because when you initiate, when you unlock the adapter, when you grab it first, you have to push it forward. I don't think either one of us clearly stated that. Like you were just, oh, look, it comes out, because I did the same thing. Because when I first, of course, I didn't read instructions, you know, I just went there and rolled with it. Right. But you see me like yanking on it at first. And a lot of people commented on that. I didn't realize it until later in the video because I plugged and unplugged like 10 times. But I realized that, okay, yeah, you went to unlock it properly. You hit unlock and then you grab it. You just push it up like a quarter of an inch and it slides right out. But in my video, you see me like kind of yanking on it. And we've even had some comments here that are like, Tom almost broke it. Because I'm like pulling on it, and it didn't come out initially. There's Marquez recording me, you know, over there in the corner. And like that wasn't planned. He was recording his video. He was like just talking. And then he sees me like grab it. And he's like, oh, let me come over here and see what this guy's doing. So it was pretty cool.
That's so cool. That's so cool. Look at that. Hey, I know
he photobombed me. And also I had everybody saying, dude, like, why didn't you put in your thumbnail of your video, like, I met MKBHD at my, you know, that would have given you a million more views, like with his picture. That's just not me. Like, yeah. I'm sure I would have gotten more views if I mentioned it, but I just really, you know, yeah. Did you see me like, here, hold this.
This is the bit, but so he's
just holding it.
I'm just like, here, just hold this.
Oh my goodness.
I'm so like, I have to pull up further. I'm like, because it wouldn't reach, you know? So then
he's making his video. Okay.
Yeah. So close.
I mean, I couldn't get any closer than that. And then it just barely reached.
Man. That is so funny.
If only he knew he was in the presence of the EV charging master.
Guru.
Well, yeah, he didn't know who I was, if anyone's curious
about
it.
He didn't know.
Not that he should, but you know, I mean, he had no idea, you know, what I do.
If it wasn't for the flap that opens forward on the F-150, if it was just like a slider that stayed close to the car,
like the Cadillac Lyric
or something, that would be fine. But because you've got to get round the charge flap, that adds an extra.
And also, a lot of people say, Tom, you should have draped the cable over it or under it.
Okay.
Trust me, I tried. It made it longer, getting over that hump and then getting it down to the. I know it looks like, why didn't you just put it over? But believe me, there's a lot of the video editing that you don't see that we, you know, and Marquez was helping me to try to get it plugged in. And it just, this was the only way to do it. So, but then you see later on, I move it over because there was a guy charging a Lucid Air to the left of Marquez and I. Ooh. And which, you know, it's interesting. There he is. I interviewed him. He's only pulling 45 kilowatts. Now, Kyle Connor, not here today because he's flying to Amelia Island, by the way. I don't think we mentioned why he's not here today. Kyle just did a video, which I haven't seen yet, about why the 900 volt systems are going to charge really slow on Tesla superchargers, because we're seeing the 900 volt battery systems pull like 50 kilowatts and that's it.
Yeah.
And this guy was like, I preconditioned, I warmed it up. I know that I should be accepting more, but he was only pulling 45 kilowatts. And that's going to be an issue for vehicles with the 900 volt battery systems.
So we don't know. What we don't know is the size of the onboard DC-DC converter in the Lucid. In Kyle's video, he suggests in that Wonder Box, they've either put 222s or 225s for 50 kilowatts of maximum. But these 900 volt systems, the 800 volt systems, because Tesla V3s are 500 volts. Go and watch that. It's on Kyle's Out of Spec Reviews channel. Mm-hmm. He talks a lot about how a car comes that can take 900 volts and says to the charger, you know, what have you got? I want 900 volts or 800 volts if it's a, you know, low state of charge. And the charger says, well, I can do 500. And so the car then defaults to its state when it charges on a 400 volt system. You know, and that's more of a problem here in Europe because we've got tons of 400 volt out there, all the old 50 kilowatt units and you know, more as well. And so when the charger can't match the voltage of the car, it then kind of defaults to its base, which for the Lucid is 50 kilowatts. And for a Taycan is 50 kilowatts, unless you paid for the extra converter, which I think everyone in Europe does because you want to use the faster charging. But probably US buyers won't have spec'd that. It's not a cheap thing on the spec list for Taycans. So go and watch that. Kyle explains it. It's like 25 minutes of an electronics lesson. It's really good. But one thing I want to do, I know it's not on the running order, so I want to put a call out to anyone watching this. In Tesla's Investor Day presentation, the head of their global infrastructure, I think her name is Rebecca Tannucci. Right. I think if I got her name right, she said they're now putting V4s into the ground in Europe. I don't know where they are.
They have longer cables.
But I want to see one.
Right. I just saw someone post, think Electric Felix, he just posted a couple hours ago spot where there was a V4 installation. And he got a peek because they had covers on them. And they pulled the cover off for just a moment and you could see the back of it. But
right.
Electric Felix is on top of all that stuff over there.
Thank you. Because I searched last night. I couldn't find anybody posting V4s because, you know, the Tesla community aren't shy about coming forward. And I'm like, how can these V4s be in the ground? I'm on his Twitter now. And I haven't seen one. I gather they're taller. The cable runs on the outside, not the inside of the loop. It's longer for the non-Tesla cars. Where is it? I'm glad I'm not showing that because that's gone to a very bad place. Okay. So let me have a look here. That's his pinned tweet. I'll try and find it because, I really want to see these V4s. No, that's great. Thank you for the tip on his channel.
Martin, while you're looking that up, let me just talk about wrapping up the whole Magic Dock thing. So overall, it was a great experience as far as I'm concerned. The biggest issue is the cables, you know, is the cable length or actually the positioning of the charge ports on all the other EVs. It's not Tesla's cable length problem because they never had a problem before. It's all of the fact that we have charge ports located all over vehicles on every corner, fronts, rears of electric vehicles. They weren't designed to charge at Tesla charging stations. Hopefully the longer cables. I even think that besides the V4s, somehow they're going to figure out a way to retrofit longer cables on the existing ones because there's too many of them out there. They're not going to be replacing all of those stations with V4 hardware. So I think they're going to have some other kind of solution. But other than that, for me at least, the experience was flawless. It's that, you know, Tesla just has such great integration. The app is so easy. Lacey demonstrated it nicely in her video. You know, you just download the app. You click on the site, you choose the port that you want, you know, unlock connector, it clicks, you push it up, you pull it out, you plug it in and it starts charging. It initiates the charging session really quickly. And, you know, as we've commented about this on Electrify America, ChargePoint, EVgo, it seems like, you know, that wheel spins for a while there's a communication process. And I had always kind of defended some of the networks, you know, the guys that are out there, because I talked to their engineers and they basically said, look, you don't know how hard this is. Tesla has it so easy. They design their software. They design the cars. They design the hardware for the charging equipment. It's all integrated seamlessly. So of course it's going to work every time really easily with no flaws. We have to deal with dozens of manufacturers, many dozens of vehicles. And then the manufacturers change their software slightly. And then the CCS protocol is off. Like people interpret CCS protocol slightly differently. So that's why we have problems with communication, with drop charging sessions, with failed initiations, because we have it much harder than Tesla. okay. And I bet on that. And I said, okay, yeah. I'll give you that. That could very well, it sounds very hard for me. I'm not an engineer to understand. Oh, and then they said, and then you got to throw in the credit card, where sometimes we have the credit card failures, the validation failures and all this stuff. Mm. But now I see Tesla. Okay, they just charged my Ford Lightning seamlessly. I just hit the app, release the dock, pull it in, plug it in. 8 seconds later, the thing's charging. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how this works with all the other brands. I've already seen some other people post that they had slight communication problems, which actually I would be floored in disbelief if that didn't happen. If every single vehicle just said, oh, look, this should work perfectly. But let's see what happens over the coming months with more and more people using this. And as they roll out the Magic Docs to more places, if they really just nail this and it's just so simple and everything just works, then, you know, the other guys can't use that as an excuse anymore. It's just their incompetence. And I hate to say that, but, or, you know, not failure to trying, but they're doing something wrong, because we see the issues we're seeing on other networks. I've experienced it many times where failure to initiate, move over to another station. It initiates 8 minutes into the charging session, boom, shuts off. And I'm like, because I'm recording it, you know, and I got to reinitiate it. So, you know, it's still too early to tell, but my first impression is Tesla just did it better. And let's see what happens.
Right. So go ahead.
I was just going to say chef's kiss.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
It was really great.
Thank you so much for your tip on Electric Felix's
YouTube channel. I saw it this morning. Yeah.
And it's had look at this. Only 900 views. So the Tesla community, I don't think, have woken up yet in the US. Because this is going to get shared a ton today. Yeah. So you're seeing this first. These are taller. Look at the height of the guy standing. He's on the same level there. There's a guy stepped down as well on the right-hand side. But the guy on the left with the backpack, he, you know, it looks maybe he's, you know, sort of 5'10", 6 foot. And that's above him. And so, they're taller, longer cables. There was a shot I was able to get from Felix's video as well, from the workings inside. Again, it looks really elegant. Like, all of their electronics looks fantastic. So much of the heavy lifting is done in the cabinets set back as well. So this is a great find, a great video. Go follow Electric Felix. He's so good with charging and stuff like that. How exciting. I mean, they're obviously not commissioned yet. You can see they're behind a fence, but... So 1,000-volt system, the power they can deliver, we don't know. But again, that 1,000-volt system solves all the problems with those EGMP cars and Taycans and stuff wanting that higher voltage. And does it indicate what Cybertruck is going to be running in terms of an increased pack voltage? I don't know. We're speculating now, but that would be amazing. So very cool. Thank you.
Yeah, there's still not a whole lot of details about V-Fork out yet. So looking forward to hearing about that.
Wasn't there a patent application last summer discovered? We posted that on Inside EVs, and they were like, well, it looks a bit like the destination charger, so it's probably not. I'll try and dig that out.
Hmm. I mean, those are taller. Like, the destination chargers are kind of like slimmer like that and tall. But so I should give a little quick update as well on what's going on with my situation. So as many of you viewers know, I recently got a Tesla Model 3 used up in Wakanda, Illinois. And... So in order to help me pay for it when my money runs out, I started a YouTube channel, and hopefully we'll, you know, I don't know if this is going to work. This is the most naive, dumb idea ever, but I'm going to make videos, and maybe it'll help me pay for my car. We'll see. But anyway, I just really wanted to thank all of you for checking out my video about picking up my car in Wakanda, Illinois, and subscribing to my Drive Electric with Dominic channel, and the terrific messages of congratulations and encouragement. It's been quite a week, and I'm very close to the magic 1,000 subscriber mark already. It's kind of nuts. And I hope to have the next video early tomorrow with the trip back. So the car does have a couple issues that I've discovered. So there's a slight ding in the bodywork on the driver's side near the top of the wheel well in the back. It's not especially noticeable. I mean, I did a couple walk around videos and I didn't see it when the car was like all clean. So I'm not in a huge rush to address that. The other, though, is an AC charging limitation, which I thought was possibly caused by my house's electricity supply. But looking at the footage from the dealer, Kyle actually spotted there's an error message showing there's already a message about not being able to charge or something until the owner transfership happened or whatever. But then just before it clips, there's a briefly, you can see the message about an error message about the power supply, there being an issue there. So anyway, I need to look into that and do more research, and then I'm going to let you know what I find out. And I'll probably make a video about it because I guess that's what I do now, right? I don't know.
Just out of curiosity, did sometimes when you buy a used car at a dealership, they give you like a 30-day warranty or something like that. Did that come with this at all? Just in case there's an issue with the charging, that might be covered.
Oh, I don't know. Actually, I should...
Sometimes they give you like a really short warranty. You know what I mean?
Right.
To say we have confidence in our used cars, and you know, if you find anything in the first month, you know, we'll pick it up. So
find out. I need to go over my paperwork. Yeah.
Yes, you need to go over your paperwork, and you need to find out quickly what's wrong, if there's something wrong with it.
Right. They didn't mention that, I don't think. But I mean, there was so much going on, but other things that needed to be done. Right. It's like papers flying everywhere and documents and signing this and that. It's like a big blur, really.
Well, a lot of dealers don't give you that, but some, I know some dealers do offer, just like they give you a confidence of like 30 days if you find anything, but then you're on your own. Just so we checked everything works, you know, and, you know, give you a couple of weeks to find out if there's any issues.
Right. And they might have seen this error message and just really not understood exactly, because it could have easily been, you know, something to do with their electricity supply rather than the car itself.
That's not cool. If they did see it and sold it with a vehicle showing error messages, even though it's electric and they don't know electric, that's not very ethical.
Right. I suspect they didn't.
Hopefully they didn't.
Yeah. I mean, my sales guy, Ron, was like super nice. And I kind of feel like, I don't know.
Make a video. Like, you know, Kyle would say.
Yeah. That's a perfect opportunity for a video.
Make a video.
Yeah.
That's right. Make a video. Say, look, what do I do? What do you guys think I should do? Do I go back to them? Do I make a video? That's what Kyle would do. So,
that's what I will do.
Just to go back full circle on what I said, this was a post that we put on July last year we finished a patent application for V4s. That looks about right. That looks like that might well be that been a tip off. So that might well be it. Anyway, there you go.
That's cool. The other
thing, by the way, not to jinx you, but this is the exact thing that you were worrying about when you were deciding, should I get a Bolt? Should I get a Tesla? And Kyle kept saying, get a Bolt. I mean, get a Tesla. You're going to love it. You're going to, and you're like, yeah, but
they never break.
I really don't have money in the budget. If there's a problem, it's going to be out of warranty. And like, you know, the Bolt works for me and I got a solid warranty, and you were waffling for, you know, let's say a little while. And so hopefully this isn't what you were, you know, forecasting doesn't come true, and all of a sudden now you got a problem that you have to pay for.
Well, yeah. Well, hopefully it's not too bad. I can't charge some, but I'm charging at like 3 kilowatts on the level 2 charger on my 40 amp. Yeah. So that's not quite right. It should be like closer to 10, I believe, right?
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah, you have 40 amp, not 48 amp. Yeah, it's probably going
to
show 9.
It's limited to 40 amp on my
full voltage.
Right.
So the in car would say 9 probably. 9 kilowatts.
Right. Yeah, in car, yeah, it showed me 3. And then on when I do the 110 thing with the portable charger, it gives me like 1 kilowatt instead of
Because it's like really like 1.2 you're getting, but it just
sometimes, you know, it says 0 actually, but there's still power because it does charge just super slow. But so just really briefly, I also shared on my Drive Electric with Dominic channel a 60-second video of this upfitted Ford F-150 Lightning that was at Victor Ford. It was pretty flashy and probably not to everyone's taste, but someone in Arizona apparently liked it enough to buy it. So, you know, I saw it there. So I made a quick video, and I did a longer edit actually, and that's up on my I have a Drive Electric with Dominic TikTok channel. We'll see how that goes. It didn't get nearly the views of the other channel, but that's fine. So it's a I don't know if you want to show that at all. Martin,
I'm just gonna find it. I keep finding videos that are not on. Let me try and find that.
Sure. It's just
there we go.
Ford F-150 Lightning. It was kind of a lower spec, so I think it's maybe a pro, But they brought that in, and they
nice wheels.
I think they spent like $45,000. It has a lift kit. It's got the chrome ear caps and the chrome step up bars, and you know, the paint thing across. It's like the Jay Leno had a Ford F-150 Lightning on his channel. It's like the opposite paint of that. So they have also got like custom seats inside with some quilting. Yeah, I mean,
that's sweet. I like it. Yeah. I really seriously thought about wrapping my Lightning with the old color scheme, like you see here. I'm not sure what color I would do. After seeing it on Leno's truck, I'm like, oh, that would be so cool, a retro wrap. But I wouldn't go as far as the, I would like to go as far as the interior, but that now you're putting in some serious coin, you know, so like, redoing the interior like that.
So but the interior looks cool. They spent like 20 some thousand, I think. Yeah. So the end price was only like 60, I think it was like 65 around, which was not bad because, you know, I don't know if it's which battery, it might have the small battery now.
It had to be. And I still don't believe they could sell it for 65. I mean, that 60 now, the standard battery Lightning is about $60,000 just stock now, Dom. It's like 58. So you were telling me this was sold for 65?
I think I believe that's what the number he said.
I would have bought that in a heartbeat.
Right. I was looking at Lightning prices online last night. There's not that many out there, but they're all kind of pricey, like over 60 for sure. Anyway,
yeah, those people that got those first trucks, it's just like the deal they got.
Yeah.
Right. I lucked out.
Yeah.
79,000 for a loaded Lariat.
Wow. That's a mega. Look at that. Cool.
All right. So moving on, let's get some news. So the big news of the week, let's get some news. The big news of the week has to be the Tesla Investor Day on Wednesday. Or was it? So some have called it a flop, a snooze fest, a waste of time. The big complaint, it seems, was the lack of information about the next model from the company. There was a lot of, you know, just hype and expectation that we'd hear about the $25,000 car, the Model 2 or whatever, like a smaller, you know, mass market vehicle. But we heard some things about it, but there was no, you know, we didn't see the design of it. There's none of that. So, you know, the stock took a big dive afterwards. And, even the factory where it's the Model 2 or whatever is going to be likely to be built was announced like the day before by the president of Mexico. So that didn't really energize the crowd when it was announced, like 3 hours in. So it kicked off with the reveal of Musk's master plan, part 3, about what is needed to achieve a sustainable energy economy, which hopefully will be more successful than his part 2 of his master plan, which has achieved maybe like one of the 4 goals that was laid out. But I digress. So there are a few things, though, I think worth talking about. Let's start with something that wasn't even mentioned. Martin, if you could pull up that image, one of the slides had shown a picture of a car in a garage. And on the wall is a very different looking Tesla charger than on the it doesn't have a cord to plug into the car. Instead, there's like a black box on the floor under the rear of the car. So that points to Tesla probably considering inductive charging at some point. So, of course, there are a lot of opinions about inductive charging. I think it's the future of charging. Lacey, do you have any thoughts about inductive charging? And if you think it's a good thing for Tesla to pursue?
I think especially when we're talking about the autonomous driving features, that wireless charging is going to play a big role in the future of having fleets just go and put themselves on a charger and not have to have like the robotic snake arm like they were piloting before. Right. It's a simple, elegant solution that the car can align with. There's been a lot of advancement as far as wireless charging is go, and I don't think a lot of people realize that there are companies, lots of companies, that are doing pilot programs or even that are installed in OEM cars overseas that have the wireless charging capability. So I definitely think there's an application for it. I think most importantly, the autonomous driving situation, but it's going to be good for fleets too. So there's a lot of different applications, disabilities. I think it's a thing that is worth pursuing, especially now that the technology is advancing more, where it's becoming more efficient and the car will just be able to go drive over that pad and start charging itself.
Right. That's a great point about autonomous vehicles. Yeah.
One of the things, as well as the efficiency of it, is the same as plugging in. I was reading on a different EV website, not Inside EVs, that one of the reasons that it's not as good is because it's not as efficient, which really annoyed me, because I'm like, this is an EV website and they should know. So the stuff like the Y-tricity technology, yep, is 93% efficient. That's the same as a level 2 plug. So, which also blows my mind, because you're beaming it, you know, through the air. Right. And it's 93% efficient. And I was like, come on, guys, you should know this. It is as good, as efficient as plugging in, which is kind of mind-blowing. Also, looking at that picture, I was trying to just zoom right into it, on the Tesla presentation. So I think, because one of the things that's held it back is they've been doing installations that are, I think that looks like a little ramp. I think that's not part of the bumper. Mm-hmm. So I think that's you've got the cable coming down here. There's been an outdoor armored cable or something, whatever hits code for where you live. And then along, but then I think that's just a little ramp over or cable protector. Uh-huh. So, you know, because one of the things is, well, until now, you've had to bury the cable. You're digging up your garage floor and you're sinking it in the concrete and all that kind of stuff. So if that's the way Tesla did it, that's very cool. But yeah, no one talked about this picture really, which was a shame, because that could be a hint. One of those things that Elon Musk has said in the past he doesn't really believe in or see has much benefit. But vehicle to grid got a mention in Investor Day as well. Yeah. And there's probably a couple of years away from Tesla exploring that. And again, he said, like, I don't really see a value in it. But the company will probably do it. So and he has a point, because they sell a home storage battery, which is infinitely more flexible, because then when you unplug your car, then your house is without a battery. And that makes a huge amount of sense, because, you know, your house doesn't need a 100 kilowatt hour battery. It probably needs a 10, 20 or 30 kilowatt hour battery. So I get it. But still, V2G is cool. Like wireless charging. Sure. It's cool. We all want to have it.
So I think they were saying they're going to offer bi-directional charging capability by 2025. But like you say, Elon's not like super hot on this. And I think they'll maybe only sell it to people who have like a power walls in their home.
Tesla's also not super hot on deadlines, Tom.
But look, one of the things that regular viewers will know that is my bugbear, my frustration, is that Tesla is more than one company. Now, another bugbear of mine is the fragility of billionaires' egos, but still, and that we had one person as the de facto spokesperson for the entire company. And then when they go and buy Twitter and disappear off there for 3 months, there's no news about Tesla coming out, because there's one person authorized to talk about the company. What was whether it was in response to criticism lately, I don't know, but there was this wonderful shot of firstly, everybody got to have their say on stage over that 3 hours, the executives, the engineers, the work on the various things. And then they're all on stools at the end, lined up, behind Elon Musk. But still, it's like a giant boy band, girl band, you know, about to get off the stools when the key changes and they launch into it. I've been watching too much American Idol, but it was so cool. It was so cool. They were all all laid out there as like, these are the best brains, the best women and men at Tesla. And I love that. I love it so much. There's nothing wrong with having Elon Musk out front and center. That's why so many people love the company, but Tesla is so much more than one company, than one person. And for me, that was the whole thing. Apart from their whole global sustainability message, which I loved. It was an amazing presentation. Yeah. They didn't announce the Model 2/Q, whatever you want to call it. But and that's why everyone was down on it.
It's fine.
And I didn't watch it.
Stock will recover.
I don't like the stock side. I loved it. It was great, because it gave everybody a voice rather than just this one person who we always hear from. Not that we don't want to hear from Elon Musk, of course. It was wonderful. Everybody got their time in the spotlight, and I think we learned more about them. It felt like Tesla maturing as a company. It felt like them being less of a scrappy startup, and it came on the same day that Toyota had torn down a Model Y and described it as a work of art. So that's the ultimate compliment from the world's biggest car maker.
Yeah.
I thought it was brilliant, and I'm not always the biggest Tesla fan.
Or Toyota fan.
Really?
Did I say that?
I totally agree with what you said. And Tesla's been maddening to work with to try to get information from. But I wouldn't be fair if I didn't say what I had a recent good thing happen with me with regards to Tesla. I had somebody reach out to me who's basically the head of charging for Tesla. and reached out to me and said, look, you know, we love what you're doing. And here's my contact information. If you need, information on our charging products, he was really talking mostly about the home charging, the wall connector and the mobile connector, whatever, you know, he's like, you're on our radar. We love what you're doing over there with educating, with home charging. And I just wanted you to have my contact if you have any questions about our products or if you need any insight about Tesla charging. And I was just like, you got to be kidding me. Like for years, I've been sending emails and saying, could you explain this? You know, I need some help with this. I'm trying to talk about your products, but unsolicited reached out to me and said, look, we know who you are. We love what you're doing. Here's our contact. Let us know if you need any help. Awesome. So maybe things are changing a little bit over there.
Look, there will be a day when Elon Musk isn't involved in Tesla through he'll have other things to do or the passage of time. But the vacuum, as we saw when, you know, if I refer back a lot to when Steve Jobs passed, at that time it was mainly him on stage. And if you watch an Apple keynote these days, Tim Cook is on stage for maybe 2 or 3 minutes. And the modern Apple, say what you want. I see people saying it's not as innovative these days, that he's a bean counter and a logistics guy. And, you know, they just keep iterating on the same old products. But whatever.
They got a lot of beans.
So it works. It works. But you see all these people on stage on an Apple keynote now when it used to just be Steve. And I get it, because people, the hype was around Steve Jobs and the hype's around Elon Musk. But I get more excited when you get to see the brains behind these big companies. And look, I know that they don't want the limelight. I thought they were all good presenters, by the way, all being coached very well. But a lot of engineers, you know, they're not going into that profession because one day they'll stand on stage and do a presentation.
Right.
But they all did really well. I'm sure that it's not part of what they do the job for. But I loved it, really loved it. So yeah, there's a lot of negative sentiment about Investor Day, but I'd ignore all of that. It was really good.
So there's a couple other things I just want to mention real quick before we move on that were updated at the Investor Day. So besides the wireless charging, which I thought was pretty cool, more importantly for now at least, Tesla also let us know that it was moving its vehicles from a 12-volt system to 48 volts. So this will allow it to power more things in the car while reducing the overall weight of the wiring. So Tom, is this a big deal really?
So I missed half of what you were saying. You were breaking up, Dom. I don't know if he was breaking up with you guys.
Look, I'll quickly chip in if you want, Dom.
Yeah, go ahead.
Car makers haven't gone 48 volts because all the bits that you can buy, the steering wheel motor that makes it go up and down on your seat heater, the supply chain for the automotive industry is all 12 volts. And so if you want to go 48 volts, you could, but you can't get the parts as easily or as cheaply. With Tesla going 48 volts, because people say, well, look, Helen, you're sitting on a massive battery. Why have I still got a 12-volt battery in my car? That's because of all the bits that it takes, to the ancillary things on a car. The supply chain is there, and it's in 12 volts. So 48 volts will, I think, move once again. Surprise, surprise, Tesla are able to nudge the automotive industry. I think that'll catch on elsewhere.
Right. So that's one big advantage of doing so much of your own, tier one work. You know, the traditional tier one work or tier two work is, you know, they build their own seats. You know, at one point they make their own, they were going to make their own glass. I'm not sure if that's still a thing, but we lost Tom.
Tom's connection, maybe.
I think that's what's kind of interesting though, is that I think it's such an advantage for Tesla being vertically integrated, as everyone knows. But like I saw more recently a video that broke down the earnings from all the legacy automakers and from Tesla in comparison, and Tesla's making like almost $10,000 profit per vehicle, whereas all the other legacy OEMs at most are just under $2,000, which is just, it just shows the scale of how much, if you're in control, those changes can happen relatively quickly and you can make a great product.
How much of you, because you've got two Teslas, how much of your ownership experience, what weighting did you give the supercharging network?
What do you mean weighting?
As in, did you buy the car because of the network, or is it a nice thing to have?
Actually,
on the scale of the reasons why you have Teslas, how important is the supercharging network to you?
Well, I only do road trips when I'm at home. So all of my driving, I don't have a daily commute because I travel for work. So when I'm driving, I road trip. So it was important. It was a factor, yeah. But actually I was not trying to buy my Model Y. I was trying to buy, I have a pre-order in for a Rivian R1T. And as I've been waiting, because I have the max pack on order with the, I had the quad motors, but probably going to drop down to the dual motor now. But I was like, well, in the meantime, I want to get a new Model Y. And we have a Model S, but the Model S is a 2016. I think it's a unicorn. It's got unlimited supercharging miles, which is one of the reasons why I got that. yeah. So when you do road trips, it's pretty impactful. And it's kind of interesting to see Tesla try to entice us to
Did you get an email?
Get rid of it? Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, here's $5,000 towards. Yeah. Nope. I'm not getting rid of that car.
Yeah.
Sorry.
They really want, Tesla wants to buy your car from you and offering you great deals. I think it sounds like they're trying to get the free supercharging cars like off the road or whatever, which is, an interesting proposition, money. Though. Okay. I mean, some cars, some people, maybe you're just done with that car. Maybe it's not really, it's seen better days. So an extra bunch of cash up front from, that's
got about 100,000 miles on it. So it's, it's got great utilization of the unlimited charging.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully you have a lot more miles, but.
Yeah, so I had the Model Y. I got that. Actually, I was trying to get the Ioniq 5. And during the time, it was right when it was coming out. It's not sold in every state. So I was calling around to like New Jersey, New York, Florida, California, trying to find the car that I wanted. And the one that I wanted, they were charging $10,000 over sticker. And I was like, I'm not, I'm in this business. I'm not paying that. I'm not going to do that. Right. So at that point, the price point of the one that I wanted was MSRP 56. And at the time the Model Y was 62, but with the $10,000 markup, the Ioniq 5 would have been 66. So I was like, I might as well just go with the Model Y. It'll be fine with the network. Cause I'm used to charging cars on the CCS network. So I know it can be a hassle, but I was fine with accepting it because I wanted the Ioniq 5 with the vehicle to load feature. Cause I take my e-bikes everywhere with me and I wanted to be able to charge them like at a camping site and things like that. But ultimately I got the Model Y because it was a better value proposition. And I was like, well, there's a lot of things that I do like about Model Y, and the charging network is the main bonus of that. So it's definitely a factor, but I was willing to go CCS. Oh,
that's interesting.
But you could have also gotten the tax credit on the Ioniq 5 when you wouldn't have on the Model Y if you would qualify for it. So that would have made it cost less effectively.
Right.
Well,
before January.
If you
I also run a business, so it's a business expense.
Oh,
okay.
Not nice. So moving on from the 48 volts. So the other big thing to me was the announcement of moving to motors without rare earth elements. So for those new to electric vehicles, the permanent magnets used in most electric motors depend on rare earth mineral. Usually it's neodymium. So Tesla originally used induction motors, which is just copper. It doesn't have any rare earth in them. But then they're not as efficient though. So then they moved to permanent magnet motors with the Model 3. And actually, as Lacey mentioned earlier, too, with a permanent magnet motor, you can come to a full stop. You can do that one pedal driving more easily. So unfortunately, though, there were no details given about the motor. So we don't really know exactly, how it's going to work. So now the Model 3 is going undergoing some sort of refresh under the code name Project Highland. And we just learned that the Model Y refresh program could be happening as well as I believe it's called Project Juniper. So it's very likely that these cars will feature the 48 volt low power system and also I'm hoping the new motors, but I guess we'll have to wait and see. I don't know if anyone wants to say anything about that. We can move on. If not,
no, you're good.
Okay. So another announcement had to do with an offer of unlimited overnight charging for $1 coming to Texas this July, and it will be available to owners with a Powerwall energy storage unit who, of course, live in Texas. I'm not sure if there's a whole lot to say about this right now, but on its face, it looks like pretty awesome. Unlimited overnight home charging for $30 a month. I don't know if there's anything about that you'd want to bring up, Tom or Lacey or Martin.
Well, I mean, I think that this is going to be common in the future. I think we're going to see between the OEMs and even partnering with, say, charging equipment manufacturers that make deals with their utilities to offer deals like this, shifting the load to overnight and offering really inexpensive charging. I know NLX did some pilot programs on this out in a couple of different states where they were going to offer a set amount of money and if you charged overnight, but that also came with the qualification that the utility could control how much power at different times, even though generally overnight you can charge at full power, but they also would time it. Like they wouldn't have everybody charging at the same time. Some of the people would start at midnight, some at 1 o'clock, some they'd phase it in. So I think this is something that we're going to see. We're still a good ways, maybe a decade off of it being widespread, but I love that Tesla's doing this themselves because I don't really see too many other OEMs getting in this business. This is going to be third party. But again, Tesla's kind of out there in front of everybody, you know, just on that bleeding edge of technology. And I think it works. I think it's great.
Right. Yeah, Tesla is doing this, the virtual grid system already in some markets, not yet the USA. So yeah, Tesla will be the utility, which is, you know, that's a pretty bold move.
Yeah.
And I think it's a smart one, actually. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I had interviewed at Fully Charged Live last year in September, the CEO of Octopus EV. And Martin, I'm sure you're familiar with Octopus over there, but they run a program where, you know, they offer like a lease on the electric car through them, but then they offer a program that's kind of similar, not exactly to what Tesla is proposing here. But I thought that was kind of interesting because they are the utility that's now kind of dabbling into the leasing car space in order to try to, they're trying to make it a whole experience as one. So I thought that was interesting. She provided a lot of cool information about that and kind of what the stance was. Because at the time I was like, well, what do you, you know, what's kind of your answer to Tesla? So, yeah, very intriguing.
Yeah, so Octopus EV are a sponsor of my podcast, so I'm kind of biased, but but yeah, they so you can get a heat pump from them, you get your car, you can lease your car, you can do a thing through the business if you want a business car, they'll do a business lease for one price. They'll sell you a home electricity, they'll put solar panels on your roof, and they are what would have been before a dumb utility company that turned up every 3 months to read your meter and send you a bill. So they're super into EVs.
So,
and they're only in Texas right now in the United States.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
Right. Hey, so we're just about out of time and Martin's got to do some other podcasting really soon. So we have a couple more topics we didn't even touch on, like the main topics. It's been a great show. It's been so great having you here, Lacey. So we should just mention that the 2024 Volkswagen ID.3 facelift has happened and we've seen it. So there's a few changes on the front and rear. The ID.3 is not sold in the US yet, or maybe ever. We don't know if it'll ever come here, but I mean, I wish it would because it looks pretty nice. They've changed the front fascia a bit, the headlight situation, and also in the rear. The mechanical bits are all the same, so the same size battery and motors. But the interior is kind of, I think it's a lot nicer, actually. If we can find a picture of that, they got the nicer materials, a larger 12-inch touchscreen, and the seats on it are kind of crazy. I don't know if you've seen those, like the it looks like a GTI kind of seat, you know, like a real bucket with lots of big old side bolsters and everything on it. It's like, kind of surprised about that.
Yeah, and when we had the ID.3, that was our amazement, really. So we still have a 13-year-old Golf on our driveway that's been a workhorse for us, 130,000 miles. I don't think I'm ever going to sell it now just because, I don't know, my wife likes to keep a combustion car around for whatever reason. You know, it's fine. Secrets are happy marriage. Some things I don't question. We have two EVs as well, so it's fine. It never gets driven, but still, she wants it. It's fine. And we got in. So when we had the ID.3, it felt so much cheaper than what at that time would have been an 11-year-old Golf. Yeah. The door plastics were hard. It had the small screen inside. So UK buyers will still get the small screen, by the way. Boo hiss, VW. But yes, soft padding on the door cards, soft fabrics inside. Because it was a 33 or 35 grand car. And I'm like, this just feels like a Polo. This feels like a 15 grand first car that you know, a 20-year-old drives or something. This feels like a little city car or the up. But it was obviously bigger and it was loads of space inside it because it was a dedicated platform. But it felt so cheap. We're like, well, this is rubbish. So I think they finally, hopefully, listened to that feedback. You've still got the silly swipey buttons on the steering wheel, which was stupid. The Golf Mark 8 steering wheel, I think, was the best one they ever made. Just put that into all electric cars, please. But still, it looks nicer.
Right. I guess the big news actually is it seems like they've got their software figured out now. So these cars will have software with route planning, hopefully. So, you can lay out your trip with where you need to charge and how long you'll charge and all that kind of stuff. I don't know. Tom, you look skeptical.
Well, it seems like they have their software figured out comment.
I mean, because we don't know. They say they do.
They say they do. They say they do.
Yeah. Until we
they say
drive
a lot
them.
Of things.
Right.
And
right,
the they is everybody, not just Volkswagen. You know, I'll believe it when I see it. Tesla, I love what Volkswagen's doing. I love their vehicles. If this were available here, I may have bought it over the Bolt EV that I just ordered, depending on the price and so forth. But I love ID3, love what they did here with the refresh. I think it looks so cool. But I'm not sold on VW correcting their software problems yet. Let's really, the proof's in the pudding. And, they had a long way to go, in my opinion. I love their vehicles, but their software was tragic. And I don't believe that it's all of a sudden it's fixed and great, Dom. So let's say,
right, it's like, who's this? No Penguin says, I canceled my order for ID4 because of VW and their horrible handling of the 23 models in the US Pro-S. Plus, ordered right away and price jumps and delayed order. Maybe buy something else. Actually, I just had a friend here. He was like a day away from getting a Volkswagen ID4, like two weeks ago, and I just happened to go over for dinner that night, and I'm like, you're not getting another they have a Model 3 already that we talked about. I helped them give them some information about that, a few years ago. So I was over for dinner again. I'm like, you're not going to get the Tesla Model Y now that it's like $13,000 cheaper and eligible for the $7,500 tax credit. And he's like, draw jobs. And so, before I left, there was a Tesla Model Y ordered, and another car canceled. Oh, sorry, Volkswagen. But you have to have that stuff going. I mean, you have to have route planning in an electric car in 2024. I mean, that's just the way it is, So anyway.
I think Martin's got to get rolling, right, Tom?
I've got to go make a podcast about cars that burn things. Don't hate me. So
it's okay. So can I just say that? let me just say the headline at least. Nissan is accelerating their electrification program. It's 15 all electric vehicles by 2030. They're looking at 19. I don't know. We talked a lot about Nissan at the very top of the show with the Nissan Ariya. We don't have enough time to jump into this too deeply right now, which is kind of a shame because I'd love to hear Lacey's opinion on this. But okay, so let me just wrap this up. Scroll down. So that brings us to the end of our show. if you have any questions or comments, please leave them on the Inside EVs forum, podcast thread, or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up if you're watching us on YouTube. Don't forget you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Follow Tom Malogny. I can't even say your name, Tom.
Just call me Tim.
Or right. Marquez. Just as Marquez, right. Isn't that
so? Just as long as you don't say Elon Musk at any point, you'll be good. Martin Lee is at EV News Daily. I'm on post.news. Lacey is at Miss Go Electric on Twitter. So click subscribe, tap that bell icon for notifications, and we'll see you all again next week. Thanks for joining us. Ciao.
Thanks, guys.